You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we've always been proud boys. But in the year 2020, you have no idea what side that means we're on, except it actually means we're on a completely different side you haven't even thought of. Get it? Get it? I'm your host, Justin Elmozeski, and we are in for a crazy October. The second October hit, it was like, okay, I got to be the best month. And it's just the farce keeps on coming. So why don't we just get into it? And I'm going to bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's a great October. We've already had our October surprise, I guess. COVID? The president getting COVID is our October surprise? No? You think they got another one? I mean, how many more could they have?
It's 2020. We're going to have about 20 more.
Oh, man. Well, they've got to be panicking now because all the flash polls say COVID has given, or contracting COVID has given Trump a bump. So I'm sure there'll be panic in the streets. I saw Twitter was already panicking, but, you know.
We'll get into all that.
Yeah, we'll get on all that. But I don't know, man. Things are going good here. It's been another hot week. Don't call it an Indian summer like we did when we were growing up, but. It's just that time of year where it's really warm here during the day and then nice, really nice, like in the high 60s at night. So beautiful California weather. And, you know, my dog's back to 100%, or as we like to joke around, maximum depression around here because his relaxing face looks like a frown. But he seems to be back to normal. Going to go to the dog park this afternoon and see how he does running around. So really excited about that.
Well, I'm glad to hear, and I'm glad to hear Colt is doing better. You know, the weather's always great. The weather's been great here in Florida, too. I mean, it's been like 70 for the past week. It's like the ideal weather for living in any place. It's amazing.
I thought you were supposed to be wiped out by all those hurricanes by now.
I'm in the middle of the state, so we don't really get hit by the hurricanes. It's awesome. It's been happening already where people have called me, and they've been like, are you worried about the hurricane? I'm like, that's going up the Atlantic coast. And then they'll come in the next time. But what about this hurricane? That one's going up the Gulf Coast. And it would have to be incredibly large or incredibly off track to actually hit us.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So I can get to the coast if I need to. Like, hey, I want to go to the beach. I can go there. It's not far. But also I'm far enough away that I don't really have to deal with hurricanes all that much.
Sounds perfect.
But I do still have to deal with the news. And, you know, we'll get into Trump catching COVID, but for me, the more distressing COVID catcher was Cam Newton. Delayed the Patriots game, so here we are recording when the Patriots game was supposed to be happening. It's crazy. One player on the Patriots catches it, and it's Cam Newton. You know who never caught COVID, William? Tom Brady.
Oh, man. Drink.
All right, let's just get into the news without Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
As always, if you would like to support us in any way possible, we appreciate it. You can find us on Patreon or Locals. Patreon, you can donate per episode. Locals is per month. TheMidside.com/Patreon, TheMidside.com/Locals. There's even Discord where you can support us via conversation and affirmations. I know this past week I was really bad about responding to people. I've had a really busy week, but things should be getting better soon. I dropped a bunch of comments in there, so Midsiders, I may have tagged you, so go take a look and give me a response to what I said. And if anyone else wants to join the Discord, you can do so at themidside.com. Just click on any episode, and within the episode, there is a link to the Discord channel. A lot of crazy news this week, a lot of Trump-centric news. So if you don't even like hearing the name Trump, turn off this episode. But you know, I'm going to try my hardest to be down the middle about Trump, right? I don't have an irrational hatred of him, but I also don't love him. I also don't like him. So we're going to try and be pretty down the middle. And I think, William, I think that makes us a pretty unique source for discussion about Trump. What do you think?
Yeah, I think our lack of Trump derangement syndrome is unique, at least in the in anything in the media at all that you see right now. It takes a lot of research to sift through and figure out exactly what's going on in all these interpretations of Trump.
And I would say Trump derangement syndrome cuts both ways, and you don't always hear that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There are the people who irrationally love him and the people who irrationally hate him.
Yeah, people on the irrational, he can do no wrong side. You know, we talked about how Scott Adams kind of has shifted into that, right? Like, Trump can seemingly do no wrong right now with Scott Adams, and he used to be a fairly reliable source. So, you know, definitely check us, right? Challenge us if you think we're buying into whichever narrative, because we want to be narrative free here. Our narrative is going to be objectivity, which is apparently white supremacy.
My narrative is just whatever the fuck I'm thinking at the time. You can be objective. I'll just be, hey, this is what's going on in Justin's brain.
Psychologicalizing.
Right, exactly. 100%. Justin Psychologicalizes is the name of this show. That's the subtitle of every episode of this show. But I agree with you about Scott Adams. Everything now is like, oh, look at Trump's masterstroke of rhetoric. And, I mean, we'll get into with the second story how Scott Adams cannot keep saying that Trump is a master of rhetoric anymore. But the first story, before Trump contracted coronavirus, everyone, before he contracted COVID-19, there was a debate. Does everyone remember that? Doesn't the debate seem like a week away, 2 weeks away already, William?
Yeah. 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 It was a long time ago.
It was Wednesday. It was last Wednesday.
I'm just gonna say this right now. I'm sure this has already been a conspiracy theory on Twitter, but Trump just got COVID to distract us from his poor performance of the debate, right?
Oh, that was one of the first things the leftists on Twitter and Reddit said. If you went on Reddit, they all said that. They even said he's faking it to get sympathy because he did so poorly in the debate.
He's both faking it and wearing an oxygen mask on the way to Marine One to go to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, both of those things are true. But that's the first news story here, right? We have a New York Times story that says, poll finds voters in two crucial states repelled by Trump's debate behavior. Couple things. One, I don't know why we're still trusting polls, but okay. Two, I like how they're saying that it was only the two crucial states. William, wasn't everybody repelled by Trump's behavior in the debate?
Yeah, I don't think these states are unique in that. I don't know. I think we texted after the debate. I watched part of it, and then I was taking Colt to the doggy gym and listened to it on the way there, and then caught up with the parts I missed afterwards. And it was just unwatchable. I don't know how to describe it any other way than just unwatchable. I don't know, Justin, what did you think?
So you can look at the article, everyone, online to see all the quotes. I don't really want to read all the quotes about all these numbers and anything. The point is basically people in Florida and Pennsylvania didn't like Trump. And
well, you're a person in Florida. That's why I'm asking you. I mean, apparently your only vote that matters is yours.
Right. Well, I'm not voting, so my vote doesn't matter. But yeah, Florida and Pennsylvania, that's what the article is about. But to answer your question, William, I found the only way to watch it was to laugh at it. Because it was just funny to me. The things on both sides that were said were just absolutely absurd. You know, Trump interrupting over and over again was just too much and over the top. Like, I get why he's doing it. And I get that his whole thing was he was trying to set the frame the whole time that he was the dominant one. And Biden was the lower one who was trying to live up to Trump. I get that's what he was trying to do, but he was doing it too much. He didn't have good judgment with when he was doing it.
Yeah.
He didn't have good judgment as far as to actually answer questions, because the few times Biden talked, he actually had somewhat of an answer to a question, where Trump did the typical thing that leftists always used to do, which was pivot to some other conversation. he would take the topic and make it into something else random, which was one of the things I always hated leftists doing back in the day. You know, Biden did a little bit of that, too. And, you know, Biden did a little bit of lying where he said he didn't support the Green New Deal, things like that.
Or bringing up the fine people on both sides thing.
Again. Right. He brought up the fine people hoax, which has been another thing this whole week that, you know, get into that in 1 second. But yeah, I thought Trump just he took the typical leftist position, which is not a surprise because, right, he was a leftist before he became a Republican to become president. And that's what he's been railing against by acting like that. And now he's fully emerged into that. It's the whole thing where the, you know, the person who acts like they're rebelling has become what they were rebelling against. That's what he's been rebelling against. And maybe that's why the left is so horrified by Trump, because they see themselves in there and they know how scary living under them would be if they weren't them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said, psychologicalizing, right?
It's the projection thing. I mean, we've talked about it before. It's pretty, you know, pretty much set your clock by it, right?
Right, 100%. And, you know, look, a lot of what Trump said, like the way he stepped on the white supremacy thing was so stupid, right? It was, you know, dude, just say you deny it. And I get where he was coming from now. Like, I've seen all the videos online where he's been denying it for years and where Chris Wallace has called him out before. Right.
Yeah. So from and context, as soon as he said, will you denounce white supremacy? He said, sure. And then they say, well, then blah, blah, blah about the Proud Boys. And he's like, wait a minute. And yeah, that all could have been handled better. But I mean, at some point, right. And then did you see what they did to the press secretary like the next day? Like, yes. Who she listed like 40 quotes, and he's like, so you're not going to do it unequivocally right now? And she's like, I just did.
Right. It's a trap they're setting, right? Where they need those words to be said. And if they don't ever say it one time, they could say this means they're white supremacist. And they want those exact words said, right? It's a word game.
You know, yeah. You know what, Justin? It's kind of like the affirmative consent with sex thing, man. You gotta keep 100%. Doing it, man. Gotta keep doing it. Or we know your natural, your natural construction as a male is to be a rapist. Just like we know the natural construction of anybody who has an R next to their name is racist. So you have to continuously just be shouting, I'm not a racist.
Well, it's even more fundamental than that, William. In this world of social justice critical race theory, isn't it anyone who's white is naturally racist?
Oh, so they that's have right.
to
I forgot about
we
that.
Must be actively anti-racist. They're asking right. him to be actively anti-racist every day. And like I was saying, I get it from his perspective. Right? From his perspective, he's been asked this over and over again. He has this prior combative relationship with Chris Wallace, and he's just fed up with it and he doesn't want to deal with it anymore. But in that moment, you have to remember, and this is why his debate performance was so poor, you have to remember that you are not trying to convince Chris Wallace in that moment. You're not having a conversation with Chris Wallace. You're having a conversation with the American people, with the potential voters. And he forgot that and slipped into a conversation with Chris Wallace, and that's why he fucked it up, and that's why he fucked up the entire debate.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here's the other thing. Because he fucked up the debate, like, he got an F, right? Joe Biden essentially got, like, a C-minus, D-plus, but everyone's ignoring how bad he did because of how well Trump, or how poor Trump did. I mean, yeah. Biden said something that's so terrifying to me. Go ahead, and then I'll say my thing.
Yeah, so, yeah, let's try to look objectively at Biden for a second. So, Biden basically did everything in the debate that shows that all this criticism of Trump acting unpresidential is bullshit. He was rude. He insulted. Tons of ad hominem, right? Like all the tactics that Trump uses, he used. So I don't want to hear any more from the Biden supporters telling me how much more presidential President Biden will be. He won't be. I saw his debate performance. Simple as that.
Well, yeah, I mean, what about the one time, so two times with what you're talking about, and another time that I was about to say that builds on what you were saying. So the first is he told Trump to shut up once, then he called him a clown at one point.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Trump had called Biden or Clinton a clown, the outrage in the media?
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing or agreeing whether debates should be gentlemanly. I'm just saying if this is the standard that the Democrats are holding our presidential candidates to, it's time to look in the mirror, right?
Oh, well, I think they, I'll say it. I think they should be gentlemanly. I think there should be a level of civility and a level of intelligence in them. Like, it's not a debate. If the goal is to change people's minds based upon what you're going to do as president, or even just to change people's minds to get them to vote for you, just yelling at each other and name calling isn't going to accomplish anything. So yeah. You have to have that level of civility and intelligence in order to have that. So I'll come out and say that. And yeah, you're right. Biden didn't live up to it either. I mean, calling him a clown. And then here, William, this is the scariest thing, right? We have all this thing about, oh, Trump's a wannabe dictator, right? He's a wannabe Hitler. Do you know what Biden said in the debate that echoes that no one's talking about?
What's that?
He literally said, I'm the Democratic Party. Trump told him when he said he didn't support the Green New Deal, when Biden claimed he didn't support the Green New Deal, even though his website says he does, Trump said, oh, you just lost the Democratic Party. And Biden replied, I am the Democratic Party. Now, I get it. He's the nominee. And maybe he was trying to express that. But that he would think in his head to say it in that way is the same thing they do with Trump when he says stuff in that way. He didn't say, well, I'm the nominee, or they all voted for me, I represent them. He literally said, I am the Democratic Party. Somebody on Twitter showed me a GIF from Star Wars where Emperor Palpatine says, I am the Senate. So we have the Democratic nominee for president literally echoing a line of the villain from Star Wars and nobody's talking about it?
Well, we've got other things to talk about, you know?
Do you want to talk about them?
Yeah, the debate's stupid. Nobody watches them. Lowest ratings in forever.
Okay, so let's talk about it. The next thing we wanted to talk about was Trump contracting COVID. And I found an article. I found it via Drudge because Drudge posts really sensational articles. So sometimes I go there to get farce. Or if I know the farce and I want an article that really is in a farcical way, I go there for it. So this is an article from nymag.com. The White House is spreading virus and lies. With President Trump hospitalized for COVID-19 at Walter Reed Medical Center, officials spent Saturday sowing doubt about his condition instead of offering clarity and reassurance. Doctors and members of the White House staff provided conflicting information about the timeline and progression of the president's illness, making a bad situation even worse. Asked what it's been like for insiders trying to get information about the president and the virus spreading through the government, a senior White House official told Intelligencer, that's easy, we don't get any. And William, then, on Sunday, there's been even more insanity. They tried to give comfort by showing pictures of Trump supposedly working, but of course his working was signing a blank piece of paper, which everyone on the internet saw. So this situation has got even more absurd.
Oh man, let's break some of this down. There's a couple things going on here. So first of all, the health of the president is a national security issue and would be highly, highly classified. So let's just start there.
And to back that up, I don't care who the president is. If it's election season, you're a month out from the election, there's a Supreme Court nomination going on, and there's a pandemic going on. If the president dies, that's pretty much one of the worst times the president could die, no matter who the president is.
Yeah. And there's tons of like implications in foreign policy and economics and, you know, all sorts of reasons why you manage the flow of information outbound on that. Also, as much as this stuff is of interest, like of public interest, quote unquote, you know, there's this law called HIPAA that, you know, the doctors can only share what they're allowed to share by the patient because of privacy. And so there's that kind of in play.
How dare you, William? President trying to keep his medical condition private because he's a private citizen. He's a private individual. How dare you? That is fascism. He belongs to the people.
He's a public property. I realize that. Signing a blank paper.
Property, you fascist.
Signing a blank paper. I'm sure if I Google image search, I will find tons of images of President Obama signing seemingly blank pieces of paper. There's a reason for this. It's a little thing called lighting. And the type printed laser printed text is going to show up differently at that angle with that lighting than magic marker or whatever he's signing that with, like Sharpie. I don't know. What a crayon? What was he using? I don't know. It was big.
Daniel
fat,
told me it was a Sharpie.
Bold font is what it was. What he was writing, big thick marker. So that's going to show up a lot easier than any sort of printed out text. So I don't even know if we can tell. This seems like the same joke about the person with the saying the president had an oxygen mask going to Marine One because he took a picture of a picture on his TV and drew an arrow to a piece of hair. This is the same level of conspiracy to me, signing blank pieces of paper. Where else? Where else? Where else was the farce in this?
I'm gonna push back on you for a second. To me, it looks like he's signing a blank piece of paper. So I'm going to take that at face value and say he's signing a blank piece of paper.
All right. I'll have to pull up one of Obama doing it.
That's fine. I have no problem with Obama doing it either. Because
I can recall the picture because he had a bunch of pens in the front of his desk. It was actual signing ceremony. And he's signing his name and it looks blank because that's just the way the lighting is in the room.
Okay. So maybe it's the lighting and maybe it's a photo op. Because the point of the photo op is not to... I'm going to go romantic on this one. Is it to capture actual reality, the photo op? No.
Well,
the point of it is to capture a spirit of something, to communicate something to the American people.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, too, they probably do that on purpose, like make the lighting that way on purpose for certain things, because you wouldn't want... Would you want people to be able to read the papers on the president's desk?
And maybe they have him sign a blank piece of paper on purpose.
Yeah.
Because you don't want people to read the actual document.
Yeah.
It could be both.
Again, what does all this matter is the real thing.
It doesn't matter because what matters is the spirit of the picture, no matter who's the president. If it's Obama and he's doing a photo op because he's like, look, I signed this bill I want you to be really happy about. Or look, I wrote a letter to Putin that I want you to be really happy about because I'm trying to make peace with Russia. Right. I mean, whatever Obama did. Right. If Obama signed that and that was the point of the photo, that's what matters. Right. Is he's taking a picture to communicate with the American people. In this case, the point of the picture was he wanted to say, look, I'm healthy enough to sit here and take this picture and sign things. So even if he's fake signing things, the point is if he needed to sign things, could he, William?
I don't know. Maybe only if they were blank.
Okay. Yes, but you get the point I'm making, right?
I do.
That's what it communicates. He is capable. And people are, with Trump derangement syndrome, as you love to say, they're turning it into, oh, well, he's trying to lie to everyone and he's trying to fool everyone. Rather than seeing what he's trying to do, on Saturday they ask for comfort. On Sunday he's trying to comfort and they say, not good enough. They always move the goalposts with Trump.
Yeah.
You can't move the goalposts.
Maybe if he had, repealed ACA that day, you know, done something like super substantial, maybe they would have been okay with it. No, probably not.
They would not be okay with anything he did ever.
Let's dig into this. What's it like for an insider trying to get information about Trump spreading the virus throughout the government? I think also that would be highly classified, right? The isolation procedures in the White House among the staff, as someone who has been in the East Wing and the West Wing and the EOP.
I demand a map of all the secret passageways that I can pull books down and pull down lamps in order to open.
I think that stuff is public record, like who comes in and out and those sort of things. That being said, at least from the actual Oval Office, that being said, you know, there are skiffs in there. There are people briefing the president. I'm not sure what the procedures are with the pandemic going on, but, you know, a lot of this stuff does have to happen in person for the most part. So, you know, maybe this is a concern, but like, I don't think the public should know about that. Do we want everyone in the world to know that Trump was visiting with the American ambassador to China or the Netherlands or whatever, and like people start drawing conclusions on that because they don't normally see that information, right?
William, you nailed it 100% on 2 points, okay? The 2 points you nailed it 100% are the fact that, one, he has a social job. So there's this conversation of, did Trump take the virus seriously enough for himself, right? How is the president of the United States, even if he is in an at-risk category, and he is clearly in an at-risk category based upon his age and his physical fitness condition,
right? Are you calling
him fat? Is he supposed to do a social job?
Yeah, how is he supposed to do it not in person? That's true.
Right. Wait, are we supposed to, the president of the United States is supposed to have Zoom meetings with everyone? First of all, William, as an info security guy, how unsecure would that be?
Yeah, that's not gonna fly over well. I'm sure there are classified versions, and I know there are VTC classified VTC sessions, but you can't do that everywhere to everyone. The kinds of conversations the president have are that, I mean, classification doesn't even apply to his doings, right? Like, he is the source of classification. So that being said, like, anything the president does, it a lot of it just has to be in person. There's a lot of stuff you can do over the phone, and there is a lot of stuff you do over the phone, but you know, it, like you said, it's his job is primarily a social job, right? And yes, in-person negotiation is way more effective than over, you know, Zoom.
Right. And even if we kept the president sequestered, if you look at the first person to catch it, it's someone who's close to him. So it's like someone in his family got it. And aren't we saying that the number one way this thing spreads is the people you spend a lot of time with, your family? So is it a surprise that someone in his quote unquote political family is the one that brought it about? And then people are trying to say it's the super spreader event of the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett.
Oh, man, the conspiracy around the timelines are awesome. But that was only one thing I was correct about. I thought I was correct about two things.
Right, the second thing you're correct about is the stupid fucking idea of contact tracing, William. The idea that we can contact trace when one person gets it and figure out every person they could possibly have infected and make them all go on quarantine. It is the most insane idea I have ever heard, as if we can just socially engineer. Are people just ready for tracking chips? Because that's the only way we could do it. If we had
a tracking chip in your pocket right now, it's called your phone.
Well, yeah, I know that, but that's what I'm saying. Is that what we're using to contact trace now?
In Canada, they are. In other countries, they are. Yeah.
Okay, so that's what people are basically advocating for then.
Yes.
Is that we need to contact trace everyone that came in contact with the president when he had his phone.
Yep. Anonymity is not a right to these people.
Okay, so you were right, and that's why you're right.
Because you are 100% correct.
That's right.
Yeah, you were holding that up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I want to get both of them then. I mean, I can press it again since I was right twice.
William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
There we go.
All right, I have one more question to see if you can nail, okay, William?
Oh, man.
Before we move on to the next story.
Just loosen up here.
The other way people are saying Trump didn't take this seriously and got himself infected is in the macro sense. They're saying that Trump did not take this virus seriously enough, and if he had, he wouldn't have ever contracted it. Now, this is insane to me, and I want to know what you think, especially because in the debate, him and Biden kept switching sides. Trump was like, I shut the country down first, but now it should be open. And Biden was like, I wouldn't have shut the country down at first, but now I want to shut it down. And I'm like, how is any of that logically consistent? If you have a position of you need to shut it down to get rid of the virus, you should have stayed consistent with that.
Oh, man, I should have got the drop from Futurama, the presidential candidates that were clones. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'll have to find that.
No.
I'll post it in Discord. That's exactly what was going on.
Since it was insane. So what do you think? Do you think Trump could have ever prevented himself from getting this? Or, I'm going to give you the or, and you can make this a false dichotomy, bro, if you want. But or is it just we can't control certain things in life, and we need to stop trying to socially engineer everything?
I think this is a false dichotomy, bro. Everyone is going to get this. Everyone. This is just the nature of the way this works. You'll get it and you'll have symptoms. You'll get it and you'll have no symptoms. Some very small percent, less than 5%, right? Will get it and have serious issues and may even die. But that's the way these kinds of pandemics happen. It's the same with the flu every year, right? I bet you most of the human population get the flu every year. It's just that some of them don't even have symptoms. Some of them have symptoms, but they aren't, you know, they don't really chalk it up as flu. And then others actually die. And imagine having this conversation about the flu, right? And I know this is more dangerous than the flu, marginally more dangerous than the flu, especially more dangerous than the flu if you're in the category that, that Trump is in. And when did this pandemic start again, Justin? January?
Really? Or when were we told it started? When
we were told it started in January, right?
Yeah, end of January, beginning of February.
If Trump's behavior was so reckless, how the hell did it take him until now to catch it?
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe that's being pedantic on my part, but it's like, really? You're going to claim his recklessness is what did this? I mean, Trump's behavior hasn't really changed. I mean, he's doing rallies now. He was doing rallies back in April and in May, right?
Yeah. And he's had the same policies pretty much the whole time, especially with the shutting down in the beginning. So you're right. But when you talked about the flu, like, it really reminded me, and you talk about like everyone catching it. I usually don't get the flu or I don't feel the symptoms. But I remember, like, when I've been reflecting on all this, I remember one time it was either like 2011 or 2012. I don't remember which year it was. I'd have to go back in my personal timeline more in a more detailed way to figure it out. I'm thinking 2012. But I remember, like, I felt really fatigued. I had, like, chills. But I could still, like, drive a car, and I could still, like, go places. And I did still drive a car and go places.
You super spreader.
Well, I was. I was 100% a super spreader. And then, like, I went home, and I put, like, a wet face cloth on my forehead so I could sleep. Like, a cold face cloth so I could sleep. So it was definitely the flu at that point. But, like, I never got a vaccine, and I've never gotten the flu since. And it wasn't like I was going to die or anything. It was just, like, uncomfortable for a little bit.
Yeah. Yep. So Trump's a super spreader.
Wait, Trump is super shredder? Is that what you just said?
Super shredder. Yeah, he's super shredder. So I don't know. When RBG passed on Twitter, there were a few of the far right folks being kind of ghoulish about it, but for the most part, you had people on both sides of the aisle really come out and, you know, have very nice things to say. Now, of course, it quickly turned into a all-out knife fight because the nomination was going to come afterwards. But at least for the actual person that passed, there was some modicum of respect. But, you know, to see just, you know, Twitter even had to remind people that telling people to die is against the terms of service. And some people got a rarity. Some people on the left actually got banned or suspended for asking for Trump to die. They also thought they were being sneaky by saying, I won't say who, but I hope he dies. And they still got suspended. So as much as I don't like the idea of suspending people for these kinds of things, I mean, these aren't direct threats when you say, I hope you die from sickness. I mean, it's different if you say, I'm going to infect you by coughing in your face when you're at this place. Then that's one thing. But it seemed like we talk about how kind of systematically the right in the United States has to kind of root out the sort of darker elements of the right. Right? You talk about, you know, if someone is credibly accused of racism, they get drummed out pretty fast. I mean, I forgot the name of the, wasn't there a governor or something that was accused of, like, having sex with underage women back in the day, and it was fairly credible, and then he got drummed
out. Are you talking about
Anthony
Weiner?
No, I'm talking about, it was some southern governor or senator. I don't remember. The point's not important. The concrete's not important. But this happens. You see this kind of policing. On the left, there is none, right? Like, the policing is not migrating towards
the
middle.
Well, it's because they want to defund it.
Yeah, that's true.
Sorry.
The policing is not a kind of clipping of the extreme, right? As what they would see as the extreme. It's a push towards the extreme, right? Like, the people who get clipped out of the left are the more traditional liberals, right? And that, you know, that I think this whole Twitter explosion of I hope he dies, and then no one, like, anyone who called that out gets called out, right? Like, it, in other words, the people saying, hey, this is a little stupid, he is the president, them saying, you're Hitler, you support Hitler, right? They were getting clipped, right? Not the people doing the ghoulish thing. So when we talk about the civility of the behavior, like I can hate this president and still ask people to, you know, act civilly, right? Those aren't a conflict. That's not a dichotomy.
Right, or expect people to just act in a way that's honest and yeah. It's not misportraying things to really indulge their feelings.
To be really clear, because it's something that really bothered me. I had to think about it a lot until I figured out what it was that bothered me about it. Because I don't cognate on my feelings. I try to unpack them and see what they're pointing at. And in this case, it was the fact that it is so accepted on the far left to wish for the death of your political opponent, right? Like that is just so acceptable, right? Not even questioned or, in fact, encouraged, right? And that's pretty dangerous, right? We talk about the unraveling of the civility currently in the United States, and that is the same thing to me. That's the same as the Antifa, BLM, don't call them rioters, civil unrest people, right? Like it's the same thing, right? Like you're my political opponent, so deuce is wild, and even worse, violence is encouraged, right?
Well, and that's what I was going to say, William. I think I'm going to put a different twist on what you're saying, because I think it's really what you're getting at. And it's that the left continually says the right is going to do things, and then they actually do it. And that's what's so insane about it. I mean, you've said it before with the projection point, but it's even less than projection. It's more immediate than projection. It's that they're characterizing the right when that's really what they themselves are doing. And I have a perfect example to sort of wrap up all of this story, a perfect example of a tweet. It's by a doctor. It has 46K retweets and 110K likes. So it has, you know, substantial reach on Twitter. And it's doing exactly what I'm saying. So we saw that Trump, what'd you say? He went out in his motorcade and like drove around and waved at people to show he was healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this tweet's about that. Every single person in the vehicle during that completely unnecessary presidential drive-by just now has to be quarantined for 14 days. They might get sick. They may die for political theater committed by Trump to put their lives at risk for theater. This is insanity. William, this entire tweet is political theater. It's acting histrionically in order to get a reaction and make Trump seem insane and make this person seem rational. This tweet is calling Trump insanity when this tweet is being insanity. And I think that sums it all up.
I guess Trump was supposed to walk himself to the White House from Walter Reed.
In a hazmat suit, probably. And they may die. They may die.
They may die. Yeah, they may die. That is true. They may die.
Hey, you know what happened to you?
You know what else they may die from? When someone tries to car bomb that car or launch an RPG at it. I'm serious, right? There's tons of reasons why hanging next to the president is a bad idea if you value your life, right? How many presidential assassination attempts have there been, you know?
You went in a different direction than I went. I was just going to say, you know what else may happen? You may die tomorrow, William. Maybe completely unrelated to COVID.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I was going the proximity of the president angle, and you were going just in general. Yeah. I may die of COVID. That's true. There is a non-zero chance that will happen.
It's insanity. It's literal insanity. And that's what bothers me nowadays. I am so sick of living in a world where people literally accuse other people of what they're doing. And they seem to completely lack the self-awareness that's what they're doing. That's the punch a Nazi thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, the problem with Nazis is they want to, you know, violently destroy all of their enemies. So punch a Nazi. Wait, what? What happened here? It's insane. All right, so let's go on to one final sort of negative story. And then we actually have a positive story to round with this episode. So that's a reason to stick around as we talk all this stuff through. So Trump's not handling the coronavirus pandemic correctly. But you know who is? California. And doing it in such a moral way, William. It's so commendable. New California reopening rules require equity measure. So California never to pass up a good opportunity to hold people by the balls and get them, force them to do things, has added something to what people need to do in order to reopen. So no longer do you just have to reach those, remember those absurd numbers, the absurd statistics they put in the levels?
Yeah, yeah, the ones that the lowest one doesn't even give us our freedom back and is within the margin of error of testing. Yeah, I remember those numbers.
So not only do you have to satisfy those impossible to satisfy numbers, now you have to have an equity measure. Here's some quotes. The complex new rules set in place an equity metric that will force larger counties to control the spread of COVID-19 in areas where Black, Latino, and Pacific Islander groups have suffered a disproportionate share of the cases because of a variety of socioeconomic factors. We can't allow transmission rates to be so disproportionately impacting those communities without significant efforts to really reduce that disparity and reduce the burdens on those communities, Dr. Mark Galli, the state's health secretary, said Thursday. Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gaxala, I don't know how you, if you say that's his last name, but whatever, director of the Center for Reducing Health Disparities at the University of California, Davis, said it was an innovative approach to controlling the epidemic that he hasn't seen. Why does this article from ABC News have so many fucking typos? I literally just copied and pasted. Said it was an innovative approach to controlling the epidemic that he hasn't seen applied elsewhere in the United States. Oh, I agree it's innovative and it hasn't been applied anywhere else. Let's just look, this guy, he works for the Center for Reducing Health Disparities.
You know, I had a quip. And as soon as we posted this article, I said, so are we supposed to infect more white people? And honestly, the way this is written, that's what it's saying, right? Like, we can't allow transmission rates to be so disproportionately impacting these communities. What do you mean allow? What does that mean? Does that mean we have to infect white people so they're on par?
It's assuming, William, it's assuming that we can socially engineer reality. That's what it's assuming.
Yeah.
And when I say socially engineer, I want to make this clear, right? When I say socially engineer, I'm talking in the micro sense. They're acting like we can pass laws today and change minimal behaviors today to change things. Let's grant their premise for a second that it's due to socioeconomic status that Black, Latino, and Pacific Islander groups have suffered a disproportionate share of the cases. They're saying it's because of a variety of socioeconomic factors. Okay. I will give you that causality for the sake of argument. I will grant you that premise. How are we going to fix that overnight? How is you saying there must be an equity measure going to fix that? How can we in our county, right? How can we in our county, we're a county in California, William, can we fix that equity without either A, making all the white people get infected, or B, making all the Black, Latino, and Pacific Islanders stay home, which only furthers the socioeconomic divide?
Yeah.
What is the possible solution to this?
I don't know. This is uniting with like three other things that I've been told, been rolling around my head, and this is not fully baked. But one thing I've been noticing is this anti-concept. I've been really wrapped up in unpacking this anti-concept of putting people into these groups based on race and identity, and then saying we need to attack the problem on that. This seems like a terrible anti-concept. This is a good concrete example to chew on it a bit. If the problem here is, it's perfectly valid for us to look and say, oh, this group is being disproportionately affected by the coronavirus. Cool.
Right. It's the same thing as if in marketing you said this group prefers to go to this type of movie. That's a valid observation to make.
So, but then you have to, they skip this step. Then you have to say, okay, well, what are the causes, right? Is it the fact that their skin color is black or Asian? Is that a skin color?
Yellow.
Is that the fact?
Motherfucker.
Is
and
that,
they didn't say Asian, they said Pacific Islanders. So they're brown.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
They're caramel. That's why, part of why I love Filipino girls. Caramel skin color is the best.
So again, let's grant their premise and say that it's actually socioeconomic or something to do with the socioeconomic, right? That's probably not the ultimate cause, right? It's probably because most people who have a mid to lower socioeconomic group probably live in denser communities, right? Like, in their house, right? Their micro community. And they also probably have jobs that can't be done online, right?
Right. Let's be serious here for a minute, okay? When we look at these three communities, right, and we especially look at Latino and Pacific Islander groups, which to me is very much code for Filipino in Southern California, right?
Yeah.
Aren't Latinos, a.k.a. Mexicans, in California known for packing a lot of people in a small space?
Yes, it is. It is okay. Common.
Right. That is a stereotype, but it's for a reason. And Asians in general, and Filipinos in particular, they have multi-generational households.
Yeah.
That is an Asian tradition.
Yep. So let's continue this unpacking. So because they don't look at that, they go on this weird, this weird anti-concept, right? The right thing to do at this point is to say, oh, so if we make a program that helps people who live in multi-generational households that have service jobs or construction jobs, if we come up with things that will impact the COVID transmission there, guess what? It will disproportionately positively impact those groups. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, if instead of focusing on the group, like, you, as long as you're looking at the right solutions, any solution is going to disproportionately impact these groups that you're calling out, right?
Yeah, you're thinking like a business person. It's the same thing as marketing, right? You don't think of, like, how do we market to black people? We say, what preferences do black people tend to share that we can market to and that will tend to get more black people?
Right. Or...
Right, if we see Chris...
It's even subtler, though, Justin. It's even subtler. What you're saying is, oh, I'm noticing this trend and it happens to be related in this group, right, of, African-Americans, 18 to 34, right? And then you say, what are the causes... for these individual people, right? Like you start finding the causes, find the cause. And then you find a trend and then you say, oh, it's affecting them in general for this trend reason. Okay. Now you generalize and you say, if I invested in this trend, would it contribute to the goal? Yes. Then guess what? It's going to help all demographics, right? And it's going to disproportionately impact that demographic in the positive way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. To continue the movie metaphor, it's like every movie with Kevin Hart and The Rock. That's why I was calling him Chris Rock before, because I was thinking of Kevin Hart and The Rock movies. It's like every movie with Kevin Hart and The Rock, right? It's like those are popular movies and they tend to be good. And who goes to see them more often, right? Black people tend to see those movies more often, right? Because they like Kevin Hart and they like The Rock. But guess what? If they're good movies, everyone will see them. So it doesn't matter the skin color of the actors. It's just that you make a good movie with charismatic people who have a good dynamic and people will go see it.
Yeah. The error with this method, by focusing on the identity group and trying to find solutions just for that identity group, is that you end up leaving a bunch of people out, right? So, like, for example, you could talk, like, in this case, we're talking about LA, right? And they're going to focus on, Filipinos and Hispanics. Aren't we supposed to call them Latinx now? Anyway, they're going to focus on that.
I don't give a fuck.
But you know what? Maybe if the cause is, oh, it's something to do with lower socioeconomic status. Well, I have a newsflash for you. There's tons of people in, like, West Virginia and Arkansas, Oklahoma, that may not be Filipino, that if you came up with a solution that applies to people with that problem, the lower socioeconomic status, giving them a higher chance for developing COVID, then you can apply it and it will work for everyone, right? But if you're only looking at that identity group and then finding causes that have to do with that identity group, you're sort of like missing it, right? Like you're missing the, it seizes up your thinking and you're not able to actually come up with something because you, I guess at the fundamental core, they don't believe that a solution can apply to all people because people share things. They have more in common than they do different, right?
Right, and that's fundamentally what it is. It's about the differences between the groups and the uncomfortable truth that they don't want to recognize is maybe there's certain behaviors these groups are participating in. And, we talked about some of them with the multi-generational households as one example that are causing them to have higher rates So rather than address those and analyze those, they'll just say, oh, it's due to their socioeconomic status, which is due to racism. Right. So they're taking the responsibility out of their hands.
Yeah, that's a great point, because if you're stuck in this thinking, if you identify, like this happened with gays and AIDS back in the day, right? It was like, oh, this is a gay disease, right? And then if you pointed out that it was behavior that was common among gays, then you were homophobic, right?
Right.
Because you're stuck in this trap thinking that, well, like, we did this analysis and we're looking at the identity and we can't blame the identity for it, right? And it's like, no. We're blaming this particular behavior. And guess what? It didn't apply just to gays. Straight people got AIDS too because of the same behavior, right? And
that's the weird, William, that is the weird backwards collectivism that they don't want to address, right?
Yeah.
So what you're saying in your instance is it's behavior that's prevalent in gays. You're not saying it's essential to gays. You're not saying if you're gay, you're going to act in this way, but you're saying gays tend to choose to act this way.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But they don't want to address it because deep down they believe they're betraying the fact that they believe that that is the way gays act. And it's the same thing with minorities. This is how the left, social justice, is more racist than anyone else.
Yeah.
Is they
and
don't want
arrests,
to say...
It arrests their thinking. That's the thing that... It stops them from being able to actually think about it. You know, the reason I'm thinking about this is because I heard something on the Trigonometry podcast. They had someone on. And she had basically mentioned the economic one. She was like, I hate when people are saying, like, well, you know, this affected, you know, brown people the most. She was talking about a news story in the Middle East. And she's like, that doesn't make any sense, because she's like, if you come up with a solution that's going to help, you know, help the poor, and more brown people are poor, then you're going to disproportionately help the poor, right? Like, or help the brown people too, right? You're going to disproportionately help them, right? Because they're the ones suffering the most. But like, it's not, they're not suffering because they are brown, right? Now, maybe there are some cases where that could be true, right? And that could come out in the analysis, right? We could certainly talk about Jim Crow, right? But those instances can only arrive at those conclusions if you allow for the fact that there are things that people have more things in common than they do differently, right?
And that's ultimately what it's about, William. It's ultimately about dividing us and reminding us of how we're different rather than how we're the same. Yeah. And there's a great quote from Broadside. You know, the people want to convince us the greatest difference is, you know, race and money and all these things. And I'm paraphrasing. So if someone from Broadside or a fan of Broadside happens to listen to this, don't get mad at me. When really the only difference between humans, it's not race, it's not gender, it's not money, all these things that they say. It's all how I would translate it is just how much you think for yourself and how much passion you have. That's the real difference.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's move on to this positive story. I think it's positive. William, I know you shared it, and you probably have a lot to say about it. So I'm going to read the headline and read some quotes from the article, and then you can say whatever you want. So
yeah.
I don't even know what Coinbase is, so maybe if you could explain that to begin with. So Coinbase offers severance package to employees unsatisfied with apolitical mission. And here's the quote from the article I'm going to link to. Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong sent his employees a letter telling them to get in line with a new company cultural shift. You read that and you go, oh, no. Rest of the sentence. Offering those unwilling to do so a generous separation package. Armstrong wrote that Coinbase had an apolitical culture in an open letter published Sunday that said the exchange would not engage in broader societal issues or entertain employee discussions about these issues. Those employees unhappy with the new direction have been informed they can take up a severance package because life is too short to work at a company that you are not excited about. The packages included 4 months severance for employees who have been at the exchange less than 3 years or 6 months for longer term employees. William, I think this is great on two levels. I think it's great that a company is coming out and saying we're going to be apolitical. That's not what our company is about. And I think it's great that he got ahead of the curve and he said, you don't want to work here. And he found a rhetorical way to make it beneficial. Well, life's too short to work at a company you don't enjoy. So, hey, I'm actually going to give you a severance package to help you out. I think this is a brilliant move twice over rhetorically.
Yeah, I agree. So I added a link there to the show notes, Justin, because the link to his actual statement is pure gold and everyone should go read it. The end of the blog post, it's fairly long, but the end of the blog post, he talks about the in summary, he says, we won't debate political causes or candidates internally that are unrelated to work. We expect the company to represent our we won't expect the company to represent our personal beliefs externally. We won't assume negative intent or not have each other's back. We won't take on activism outside of our core mission at work. We will fight to get on the same page when we have differences. We will support each other and create team cohesion. We will assume positive intent. We will put the company goals ahead of our team or individual goals. And this is great. I mean, there's been a huge movement about people bringing in their authentic self. And I think this is one of those false dichotomy bros moments, right? Justin, do you think that any of my previous employers, because I'm not going to talk about my current employer, wanted me to bring in my true self, right? Like, think of my work at the NSA, for example. Did they want to bring – should I have been able to fully bring in my radical capitalism into NSA?
Okay, when you're defining your true self as radical capitalism, I would say no. But I don't think that that's how you really define your true self.
I don't. But I'm just trying to say something that would trigger that sort of response, right? It's sort of like do they really want me to – should so when I was – when a job came up when I was at the NSA to go audit – help the SEC audit companies, I declined to participate. That's all I did, right? Because I don't want to participate in that. I don't think the government should be doing that. So I didn't do it. That is to the extent I think is rational for me to bring into my work, right? Overall, I agreed with the mission of the NSA, right? But, and before you guys go all conspiracy theory, this was just a technical assistance, right? Like, hey, help us run these tools and learn how these tools work and stuff like that. I wasn't going to help them do that, right? But at the same time, I wasn't going to go on a 20-minute soliloquy, try to make a strike like they're doing at Spotify over Joe Rogan, right? Like, I didn't do any of those things, right? Because that's – even though that too is my – I am an advocate for shrinking government out of those, you know, complete separation of economics and state, right? I'm very much an advocate for that, but I'm not doing it at work, right? And yeah, I really like this blog post. I might borrow this for my personal company, so that this will be in my file for when we are big enough that I need to have one of these statements. So Justin, do you think a lot of people are going to be taking that statement? Oh, I need to explain what Coinbase is before I answer that. Coinbase is a Bitcoin exchange, and their mission is to basically get rid of government control of money.
Okay, so then not a surprise they had this sort of statement. I think that I don't know if a lot of people are going to be taking it. I don't know what their employees are like. I couldn't even begin to speculate. I think the more interesting point of what you said is the whole true self thing. And I think there's a more fundamental conflict at work here.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Than what you were saying. I think companies do want you to bring your true self. And when I say your true self, I mean your intelligence, your work ethic, your personality. That's what I think they want to see. I think what the CEO said is correct. They want you to enjoy where you're working, and they want you to be happy about it, and they want you to show who you are every day. Who you are is not your political beliefs, though.
Yeah.
At an essential level. Politics are downstream. We always say that on the show, right? Politics are an application of philosophy. But I think the more fundamental conflict here, William, is revealed by your decision to work for the NSA. And what I mean by that is you were able to work there and be comfortable enough to work there because you don't believe, or you didn't at the time, that America was fundamentally flawed and needed to be fundamentally changed in order for the world you want to live in and the world that would be aligned with your beliefs would exist.
Right. I wasn't sanctioning evil by what I was doing.
Right. But there are people nowadays who fundamentally believe any job they're taking, they will be sanctioning evil, which puts them in a position that they don't want to address, that they don't want to uphold. They have to evade it. Because
that's
they
right.
need to work to live. But really, if they really were consistent with their principles, they would all be joining Antifa. And I mean that very seriously. They would all be trying to destroy things and tear things down. Because if they really believed what they said they believed, they would see that everything is a power structure and nothing can ever truly exist. And if they really saw capitalism as a problem, they would act this way. And that's the problem, William, is fundamentally we're at a place in American history where the past is not good enough for a foundation. And what we had in the past can't exist anymore. And we're trying to there are people trying to reinvent the country. And you can't ever work at a place at that point, because it's not like you go to a place and you say, okay, I like 75% of this, and maybe when I work here, I can make it 25% better, so it's even better when I leave it. Now they get in and they go, I hate 100% of this place. And that's why they have these conflicts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, working at, you know, looking at more examples from my work history, right? Like, At SpaceX, I still believe in their mission about making humans multiplanetary, right? Like, that everything I can buy into that mission. Does that mean I agree with everything Elon does with SpaceX? Hell no. But I can look at my values, right, and say I share this value and work with folks when it's a win-win and not when it's not. But when you bring this all this other politics in, and if you don't agree or saying like you have to agree with these, we're going to advocate these, and if you don't agree then leave, that becomes very self-selecting, right? That slows work down, and he talks about this in the blog post. It slows work down, it causes conflict, it makes you lose sight of the actual mission, right? And like, companies are there to make a profit. Right, they're there to make a good that's worth trading, right? And their reward is that profit. Just to be clear, and if you change that to include and also do social good in some nebulous way, and then bring all this politics into it, then you're going to not be able to do your primary job, which is to make this product or service that other people want, right? You're going to just lose that. And then you're not going to exist very long as a company.
And that's what I'm saying to you, William, is the fundamental point here is their definition of social good is so radically different, so diametrically opposed to fundamental American values and philosophy that it's impossible for these companies to do both. If you define social good as achieve your mission, I mean, is it Coinbase trying to do social good?
Yeah, well, I would put it the other way around. The only justification for folks to like consider like thinking about the social good is in the context of like the whole purpose of trade, right? The whole purpose of having people trade with you, right? And it's to, you know, have that advantage of win-win situations that you can trade and both be better off. And if you don't think that's a social good, then, yeah, you are an Antifa Marxist, right? Because that's what they believe, too. They don't think that capitalism leads to win-win trade situations. So why are you even at a company at that point? Why are you even working, right? All you're doing is exploiting people or being exploited, right?
Well, that's why they're fundamentally unhappy every day, because that's what they believe. I mean, I saw somebody retweeted a sticker from somebody on a bike that if somebody gets on the bike, it says, you're not a capitalist, you're like a repressed, exploited worker. That's how they see themselves. They see themselves that they have to go to work every day, and that's exploitation. And that's why, to wrap this up and bring this back full circle, why I think this move by the CEO is brilliant rhetoric. Because he's saying, essentially, it's supposed to be a win-win trade, and you don't think this is a win-win trade, so I am going to uphold my morals and do right by you.
Yeah.
My morals were, I was going to trade with you, and you were going to give me labor, and by you giving me labor and your mind, right, he also wants you to try your hardest to think your hardest, I'm going to give you money and rewards in many ways. I don't know what all their benefits are. In exchange. and you're telling me you're not happy anymore. Well, you were an asset to this company, and because you were an asset, I'm going to continue to reward you in a way that I think is fair. If you were here less than X amount of time, this is what I think is fair. If you were here more than X amount of time, this is what I think is fair. So he's continuing to play by his win-win morality and setting the terms. It's Teflon, and it's forcing them, and they're not ever going to do it, but forcing other people to confront this reality. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yep. I hope this, I hope folks in Silicon Valley, take this up and continue this trend, and build their cultures on this, right? Because the alternative is to remove meritocracy from your values, right? And add this social change aspect to your values. And then that's the drain. That's the crack in the dam that will drain the entire company, right? And only lead to division. And you know what happens, like what's been going on at Google and Facebook, right? The Great Purge.
All right, let's wrap this episode up, William. What did we learn this trip?
Well, I learned I'm very good at muting my microphone as the helicopter circles and the dog barks continuously at it. I don't think a single bark got in. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
Wow. I would say that you taught me a lot about Coinbase and how admirable their CEO is. That's what I would say I learned. How about you tell us what you all learned by joining our Discord? You can find the link in any episode on our any episode post on our website, themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Thank you as always for listening. We couldn't have this show without you. Well, we would, but it would be like screaming into a vacuum. So thank you for not just have us, you know, talking into a vacuum. Thanks to our liberty.me listeners. As always, you know, very sympathetic toward libertarians. I follow a lot of libertarian accounts. I think you guys get a lot of it right nowadays. And I would be voting for Jo Jorgensen if not for her "we must be anti-racist" comment. I mean, she did even go to Clemson. So a lot of sympathy for you there. Themidside.com/store if you want to pick up a t-shirt. My book's coming out, the novel The Cut, November 17th. Look for that. You can always support us on Patreon or Locals, Patreons per episode. Locals is per month, themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/locals. That is how we keep the lights on. And as always, the best way you can keep this show going and growing is to tell a friend. The farce is growing, so why don't we grow the Midside so we can witness it all together? This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have an apolitical day. Audiobook when?
I don't know. Whenever I have time or I can pay someone to record it, hopefully Ray Porter.
I can't wait. When do I get my signed copy?
When you pay the $50. I'm actually going to have a package for it. And awesome. I think I'm going to set it at $50 where people can pay for the package and then I'll just buy a bunch of copies and ship them out myself. So the $50 will cover the book, the shipping to me and the shipping to them, as well as the signature.
Awesome. I can't wait.